President Volodymyr Zelensky travels to London.
We have freedom. Give us wings to protect it.
Plus, how was Joe Biden's State of the Union address received by Ukrainians?
United States and the world stand for most basic of principles and stand for sovereignty, stand for the right of people to live free from tyranny. And basically, the test was passed.
And later in the program, we visit a school near Kyiv with an innovative and sustainable solution to the problem of power outages. Today is Wednesday, February 8th. From the Voice of America in Washington, this is Flashpoint Ukraine. Good evening, I'm Steve Karish. President Joe Biden spoke directly to the American people and a divided Congress Tuesday night in his State of the Union address. Rising tensions with China and the war in Ukraine were the main foreign policy issues. VOA's senior diplomatic correspondent Cindy Sain reports from Washington.
As President Joe Biden spoke to a joint session of Congress Tuesday evening on the State of the Nation, tensions with China loomed large after a suspected Chinese surveillance balloon captured the attention of both lawmakers and ordinary Americans. Without mentioning the balloon specifically, Biden sought to reassure Americans while sending this message to China.
I'm committed to work with China where we can advance American interests and benefit the world. But make no mistake about it. As we made clear last week, if China threatens our sovereignty, we will act to protect our country, and we did.
Russia's war against Ukraine was also featured in Biden's address. The U.S. has committed more than $27 billion in security assistance to Ukraine. Biden said Russian President Vladimir Putin's invasion 1 year ago was a test that America passed.
We united NATO. We built a global coalition. We stood against Putin's aggression. We stood with the Ukrainian people. Tonight, we're once again joined by Ukraine's ambassador to the United States. She represents not just her nation, but the courage of her people.
Some Republicans have been skeptical of military aid to Ukraine, but that was not the case when Republicans in the chamber, including House Speaker Kevin McCarthy, appeared to strongly support Biden's remarks. Elizabeth Shackelford is with the Chicago Council on Global Affairs.
I have to say, I saw a lot more support coming from the Republican side of the aisle when he was speaking about Ukraine, particularly at the moment when he said, "We are in it as long as it takes." This is something that we have heard Republican Party push back on specifically, saying that there wasn't a blank check for Ukraine.
Apart from the war in Ukraine and a long-planned pivot to Asia, President Biden is planning for the first visit to sub-Saharan Africa by an American president since 2015. Cindy Sain, VOA News, Washington.
Well, as we know, President Biden addressed Congress, the nation, and the world Tuesday night in his State of the Union address. Naturally, it was a wide-ranging speech on a variety of topics, foreign and domestic. For the purposes of this program, however, it's what he said about the war in Ukraine that's of particular interest. For some help breaking it all down, I'm joined in the studio by Tatiana Voroshko, managing editor of VOA's Ukrainian service.
President Biden did mention Ukraine. He did it after a full hour within his speech. He did it in reference to his last year's State of the Union address, which was delivered just days after Vladimir Putin's invasion, full-scale Russian invasion against Ukraine. And he said that it was a test for the ages. It was a test for America. It was a test for the world. Could United States and the world stand for most basic of principles and stand for sovereignty, stand for the right of people to live free from tyranny. And basically, the test was passed. He said that we led, we united NATO and built a global coalition. Unlike last year, he did not talk about crippling sanctions against Russia. last year, he focused on what kind of address they were rating against the Russian invasion. This time, he just mentioned that the global coalition, that the address was united. He didn't talk about the aid, the military, or any other aid that the United States is providing to Ukraine. When he introduced Ukrainian ambassador Oksana Markarova, who was the guest of the First Lady, he said that we will stand with you as long as it takes. So that was the reference for continuous ongoing support of the United States to Ukrainian people in its defense of its sovereignty.
Now, there's been a lot of speculation lately that with the new Republican majority in the House of Representatives, that support for Ukraine in Congress might be weakening a little bit. Did you notice any booing, any heckling from the Republicans while the president was talking about Ukraine, or were his remarks very well received?
I would say both. So we saw that Marjorie Taylor Greene was disagreeable with his address. But also we saw that Mitch McConnell, the minority leader in the Senate, was wearing a tie in the national colors of Ukraine, blue and yellow. And we saw a lot of congressmen and senators wearing lapel pins with Ukrainian national colors. But this was on display, but not as much as the last year. And so we also, Ukrainian service, we had our special programming on the night of the State of the Union address. And we had a couple of experts to kind of answer those questions you just asked.
So what did they say?
Sergei Kudelya, a Baylor University professor of political sciences, he paid attention that this speech was much shorter than the last year. And obviously, last year, Biden spoke about Ukraine right off the top. Right now, it took him a whole hour to get there. And he suggested there are three reasons for that. The first one is that Biden speaks, first of all, to the two chambers of Congress. He speaks to the American people, but his primary audience is the Congress. And the Congress now have bipartisan support for Ukraine. So it's there. It's ongoing. The second reason he suggested is that because Biden might run for re-election, so he needed to focus on the issues which are most important for the audience, the most domestic issues, and we are talking about foreign policy. This is China. But the third possible reason is that support for Ukraine, for the ongoing support, for providing aid, is maybe waning among American public, and especially among Republican-leading Americans. And we know that according to Pew Research Center, in March last year, 49% Republican-leaning respondents said that United States is not providing enough. Only 9% said we're providing too much. In January this year, 40% said that we are providing too much. Among American public overall is 25%, a full quarter of Americans, according to the polls, believe that we are providing too much support to Ukraine. The other guest was Andrei Dobryansky, the spokesperson for Ukrainian Congressional Committee of America, and he said that, you know, what do we want? Do we want a speech or do we want action? The actions speak louder than words. And the support of United States to Ukraine is ongoing. It's strong. It's something which is happening every day. And there might be not necessary to speak about it that much. But hopefully, he said, President Biden is going to make a trip to Europe, and there he will deliver his foreign policy priorities, and probably there we'll hear more about support for Ukraine as a policy goal for United States.
So it sounds like overall not a bad night for Ukraine, but it could have been better.
I would say yes, but also people in Ukraine, from what I looked around, like I looked in what media writes, the first reactions, there's not so many reactions because the news cycle moves so fast. And we see that today President Zelensky is in Great Britain. He's in London. There's a lot of coverage focusing on that. And what was important for Ukrainian people is this very line that we will stand with you for as long as it takes. That's the most important, that this ongoing support is going to continue.
And we'll leave it there. Tatiana Voroshko is managing editor of VOA's Ukrainian service. Tatiana, thanks for stopping by today. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky visited Britain Wednesday, where, in a dramatic speech before the parliament, he pushed for fighter jets to counter Russia's brutal aggression. He also thanked the British people for their support since day one of Moscow's invasion.
From the first seconds and minutes of the full-scale war, Great Britain, you extended your helping hand when the world had not yet come to understand how to react.
The embattled leader's daring visit to Britain in a bid for more advanced weapons comes as Ukraine braces for an expected Russian offensive and hatches its own plans to retake land held by Moscow's forces. Support from Western allies thus far has been key to Ukraine's surprisingly stiff defense, and now the two sides are engaged in grinding battles. Hundreds of lawmakers and parliamentary staff packed the 900-year-old Westminster Hall. It's the oldest, and unheated, part of Parliament to hear Zelensky's speech. He brought a gift of a Ukrainian Air Force helmet inscribed by a Ukrainian pilot with the phrase, "We have freedom, give us wings to protect it."
I trust this symbol will help us for our next coalition of the plains, and I appeal to you and the world with simple and yet most important words. Combat aircrafts for Ukraine. Wings for freedom.
Zelensky also called for stronger sanctions against Moscow until Russia is deprived of any possibility to finance this war. He said he was speaking on behalf of the brave people of his own country, and he thanked Britons for their bravery. The UK is one of the biggest military backers of Ukraine and has sent the country more than $2.5 billion in weapons and equipment.
The horizon never stays clear for a while. Once the old evil is defeated, the new one is attempting to raise its head. Do you have a feeling that the evil will crumble once again? I can see in your eyes now, we think the same way as you do. We know freedom will win.
British Prime Minister Rishi Sunak announced that Britain will train Ukrainian pilots on NATO standard fighter jets. Ukraine has urged its allies to send jets, though Britain says it's not practical to provide the Ukrainian military with British warplanes. More than 10,000 Ukrainian troops have also been trained at bases in Britain, some on the Challenger 2 tanks that Britain is sending. Coinciding with Zelensky's visit, the British government announced a new round of sanctions against six entities that Britain said supplied equipment to the Russian military. For a look at President Zelensky's travels and a preview of the story about solar energy in Ukrainian schools, we're joined by our reporter in Kyiv, Anna Chernikova.
Another unexpected visit from President Zelensky. This time it's his second visit abroad since the beginning of full-scale Russian invasion. And this time it's a visit to London. So today President Zelensky met with the Prime Minister of Great Britain and also with the King, with King Charles. So what we know for the moment is that in line with this visit, Great Britain has already imposed new sanctions against against Russian elites and also Russian companies which have connection with military section. What we also know that it looks like, and again, this is not something that is confirmed, but according to British media, it looks like that after this visit and after the meeting of President Zelensky with Rishi Sunak, the Prime Minister of Great Britain might announce new military support to Ukraine. And this might include preparation of Ukrainian pilots to use British aircraft. So we will see. But there are a lot of expectations on that. And a lot is discussed here in Ukraine also regarding that, because also President Zelensky, during his speech in the parliament, which he had also today in London, he was talking a lot about aviation, about pilots, and he even presented the head of parliament, of British parliament, with a helmet from Ukrainian pilot. With a special message in English that basically it was written that Ukraine has freedom and Ukraine really needs British wings to protect this freedom. So this is what we know for the moment. And also Brussels is expecting that President Zelensky will join the EU summit, which is happening soon as well, and that he will visit Brussels after his visit to London. And what was also confirmed just a couple of hours ago, that actually after the visit to London, President Zelensky will go to Paris to meet with President Macron and with Chancellor Scholz, also to have certain discussions.
So we know that President Zelensky has been and will be very busy traveling all around Europe. Anna, you've been busy too. We're going to air another story of yours later in the program. This one's about a school using solar energy. Can you give us a preview?
As we all know, for the past couple of months, Ukrainian energy sector is the main target of Russian attacks, one of the main targets. And it's really a very tough situation in the energy section of Ukraine. So, and basically this creates certain conditions for Ukrainians to rethink its energy future. And the project that we're talking about in this story is a project which was implemented in one of the schools in Irpin. Irpin is one of the areas that was that suffered the most from Russian occupation, and this school as well. It was rebuilt and it was renovated. And this is the first school under the Ukrainian charity initiative, which got a solar panel system.
Anna, you say in your story that the challenges that Ukraine faces because of the problems, because of the destruction of the energy infrastructure, also presents it with unique opportunities for long-lasting and sustainable solutions. How hard is it for folks in Ukraine, because of the war going on, to get access to some of this new technology?
Well, you know, as we can see, at least, you know, this is experience that Ukraine has. This war is not only about devastation and not only about tears and you know, terrible events happening, but this war is also about great opportunities and changes which are happening. And it is difficult, but it is something that is needed for survival, because without these changes, it will be very difficult for the country to survive. And Ukrainian you know, organizations that work on in such sectors and also in different sectors, they work hard, but they have this opportunity to cooperate with European partners, with US partners, with international partners, in order to implement such projects. And this is exactly also, this story tells about the project that was supported by international donors. Of course, it's never easy, especially in a time of war, but it is possible, and for survival, it is needed.
That's Anna Chernikova in Kyiv. Anna, as always, thank you for your time today.
Thank you, Steve.
You're listening to VOA's Flashpoint Ukraine. I'm Steve Karish. Anna Chernikova is back. As Russia's targeted attacks on the Ukrainian energy infrastructure continue, Ukraine is forced to rethink its energy future. While inventing ways to quickly restore and improve the resilience of its energy system, Ukraine is also looking for green energy solutions. Anna Chernikova has the story from Irpin, one of the hardest hit areas in the Kyiv region.
For months, the Ukrainian energy system has been the target of Russian attacks that leave homes, schools, and hospitals in the dark, sometimes for days at a time. This is encouraging Ukrainians not only to find unconventional ways to quickly rebuild energy facilities, but to consider possible alternative energy sources. This school in Irpin is the first to get its own solar power station, thanks to an initiative of the non-profit Energy Act for Ukraine Foundation and the support of international donors. Yuliana Onishuk, foundation founder and CEO, explained that the station consists of solar panels, inverters, and a system that allows the school to store solar energy and use it during power outages. Ivan Ptashnik is head of the Mriya school.
Our main aim was to ensure that the system storages are always fulfilled with electricity. In order to ensure that, we developed a technical solution that foresees that if we have a sunny day, the electricity that will be generated from the solar power plant will go to storage systems in order to fulfill them. It's a priority number one.
The station's battery storage system can provide the school with a power supply for up to 4 hours. The school's principal explains that the solar power station will allow schools to operate using power that is cheaper and greener than that provided by gasoline generators.
This is a breakthrough for education, that we simply become energy independent.
For Ukraine, 1 year into Russia's full-scale assault, energy security is one of its main priorities. The foundation plans to install similar solutions in a total of 100 schools and medical institutions across the country. 1 year on, the war has created many new challenges that Ukrainians face daily. But it has also created an environment for rapid innovation that is key to survival. Anna Chernikova for VOA News, Irpin, Ukraine.
Russian troops have left behind a deadly legacy of booby traps and landmines in villages they previously occupied. A Ukrainian demining team is working to make the area safe again. Elizaveta Krotik has the story, narrated for us today by Anna Rice.
We're ready.
Fire!
In this video, members of a Ukrainian bomb disposal squad are deactivating mines in the Mykolaiv region of southern Ukraine. The village of Snyhurivka in the Mykolaiv region was occupied by Russian troops for over 9 months. Ukraine's armed forces liberated the village in November, but locals still couldn't return. That's because Russian forces left behind all kinds of mines, booby traps, and undetonated munitions.
They were expecting an attack and made booby traps to be prepared. They wanted to protect themselves, but then they had to withdraw and just left things as is.
Before anyone can move back, the minesweepers move in.
We don't go in blind, we get some information first, meaning if we are told there are potential mines somewhere, that's where we go. We start by inspecting the road because we'll use it later to move around. Then we proceed with the rest of the area.
Usually one of the first areas minesweepers scrutinize is under power lines. The sooner that area is clear, the sooner electricity can be restored. The bomb disposal team never forgets their job can be a deadly one.
In villages we would find grenades, mortar bombs, undetonated munitions. These objects are especially dangerous because handling them incorrectly may lead to death or serious injuries of arms, hands and eyes.
All the dangerous objects minesweepers find are then taken to a special facility used for storing undetonated munitions and later for defusing them.
Fear is a sign of common sense. People should be afraid to touch these objects, even minesweepers. If they have no fear, that's a problem. It forces us to be more careful, because you know people will be back in this area after you leave.
In December, 3 munitions experts were killed while searching for mines in the Kherson region. Officials with the emergency service unit say that since the start of Russia's invasion, over 8,000 undetonated munitions have been found and destroyed in the Mykolaiv region alone. For Elizaveta Krotak in Mykolaiv region, Ukraine, Anna Rice, VOA News.
And that'll do it for us today. Stay up to date with continuing coverage on Ukraine and news from around the world 24 hours a day. Visit us online at voanews.com and on social media. Just follow VOA News. On behalf of the entire Flashpoint Ukraine team, thanks for listening. Until next time, I'm Steve Karish.
This is the voice.
of America. Washington, D.C.